Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on Fox 24 event, which takes place in Kansas City, Missouri. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we lost 3.25 units after going 0-1 on our premium bets for UFC 210. We also won our one-unit free bet on Desmond Green at plus 170 odds. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 24 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Big Network Fox this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a women's bantamweight contest between Ashley Evans-Smith, who is 5-1, and Ketlin Vieira, who is 7-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Evans-Smith minus 170 to come back on Vieira at plus 130. Right now, looking over our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it's currently Evans-Smith minus 185 to come back on Vieira at plus 155. So early action coming in Evans-Smith's way. She's definitely the more popular fighter amongst the MMA hardcore fans out there. So really not surprised with the early action coming in her way. I think it's going to be a competitive matchup, though, for sure. I mean, both ladies definitely have some positive qualities about them. And the way they match up, I think it's going to be just a back and forth type of battle. I mean, obviously, Evans-Smith is more well known for her grinding style. She has a wrestling base. She definitely is a tough grinder. I mean, once she gets a fight to the floor, when she's able to do so, she gets on top. She's smothering. She has good top control. She drops some nasty ground and pound. That's what I like about her the best. I think that she has that killer instinct. Once she has, you know, bad spot on the ground, she starts unloading. And a lot of times it works out for her benefit because she's had, I believe, three stoppages that way along the way. So she's definitely one of those girls that can do a lot of damage on the ground. She doesn't really transition for subs that often. She needs to get more offensive in her sub game, and then her sub defense could improve a little bit as well. But overall, she's just tough out, and especially on the ground. But also, if you look back at her last few performances, her stand-up's actually improving to the point where she's just not your overall grinder right now. I mean, she could keep it upright at times, and she can do some damage on the feet. She's got some speed. She has some good boxing, and she's mixing things up. And she's getting tagged. I mean, her defense could always improve a little bit, but she's, you know, hittable. She's been rocked. Her chin is hanging in there, though. She's never been officially knocked out, because even when she does get rocked and gets damaged a little bit, she recovers fairly quickly, and she's just tough. I mean, she's not going to quit on you. She's definitely has the heart of a fighter, and she's, you know, wants to win and has the will to win or whatever, and she pushes through adversity. So you got to love that about Evans-Smith. Vieira, on the other hand, I think overall, again, I think she's been pretty solid. If you look back at her resume before the UFC, it's okay. It's nothing to really brag about. Her fight against Fashels was really the big indicator to me, because Fashels is a pretty strong girl. Now, of course, she needs to improve in a lot of areas because she's still raw, Fashels is. But, I mean, physically, she could be overwhelming at times. I mean, with her strength, and Vieira was able to hang in there and do okay. In fact, she outmuscled Fashels at times in that fight. So Vieira matches up size-wise pretty good with Evans-Smith. And again, I think she's physically strong enough that she can probably fend off Evans-Smith pretty well in this fight. That's why it's going to be so competitive. Now, on the ground, Vieira does have a better jiu-jitsu game. She's offensive with it. She does look for subs. She definitely has some top control as well. She scrambles okay. And she on the feet, she's actually not bad either. Her boxing is getting better, and she can do some damage. But as the fight progresses a little bit, that's where she got in a little bit of trouble, even in her last fight against Fashel. She does tend to slow down when the going gets tough a little bit. And like in that third round, of course, she let Fashel start taking over. So she can't afford to do that even against Evans-Smith. Evans-Smith is going to kind of put a steady pace on her, and she can't afford to give up a round in this fight because it is going to be ultra close. So with all that being said, I think Vieira has the better shot of winning this fight inside, honestly, because of her submission skill. And I think maybe if she gets, you know, position, she can land something decent as well. But I think Evans-Smith overall is the better grinder, and I think she's going to push the higher pace. And even if it's close early on, I think maybe if she hangs in there and doesn't get finished, she starts taking control by the later round. So Evans-Smith by a competitive decision, a split decision type of fight, is my call here. So Evans-Smith is my pick.
Yeah, I think the fight's a going to go relatively that way. Evan Smith is just a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. I think she can bully Vieira a little bit. She does have a decent amount of wrestling, and honestly, Vieira's biggest strength in this fight might be her ground game. So if Evan Smith can just use that strength and wrestling in reverse, then I don't really see where Vieira has a strong edge. Vieira has decent striking, but honestly, Evan Smith looked pretty good on the feet in her last fight against Marion Renault. That fight could have gone either way, but I thought that Evan Smith's stand-up was markedly improved. And if she brings a little bit more improvement this time around, then I think on the feet, she should definitely get the edge against Vieira. And then I expect her to be able to push Vieira around a little bit in the cage. You know, a lot of the women's fights end up spend a majority of their time in the clinch, and I can see Evan Smith having the inside position in the clinch, just pushing Vieira around a little bit, and I don't see Vieira having the strength or the technique to kind of get out of that position. So overall, I like Ashley Evan Smith. I think she wins a decision. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Zach Cummings, who is 20-5, taking on Nathan Coy, who is 15-6. Now, Nick, where did you open? What's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Cummings -280, the comeback on Coy +200. That wasn't quite enough. Right now it's Cummings -410, the comeback on Coy is +315. So I was around a 3-1 mark. The public in early action out there thinks it should be around 4-1. Can't really argue it, honestly. I mean, Coy, in my opinion, has always been an underrated fighter. I've really been a fan of his since, I mean, his days back. Early back when he was fighting in, I believe it was called Sport Fight with Lin and crew over there in that organization. So, I mean, he's got some quality wins over decent fighters, and he's always flown under the radar. Unfortunately for him, he's 38 years old at this point, and he's not getting any younger, even though I think he's peaking right now as far as just overall MMA ability, meaning he's always had that wrestling background. He's always been a tough out as far as his grinding style, but he's improved his stand up to the point where offensively he's a little bit of a threat. I mean, you can't take him lightly on the feet. He's got power, that wrestler's type of power. He's got the fight IQ, pushes a very high pace. And then typically if he wants to get the fight on the ground, he's going to get it there. And then once on the ground, he's controlling, you know, I mean, he's just a top tier wrestler. So I think he should have made his UFC debut a long time ago, and he probably would have had a more successful career. But unfortunately for him, again, that 38 years old, he is going to be slowing down. I mean, he just – his body, even though he's at that point where I think mentally he's at the top of his game, his body's just not going to do what it once did. His chin is a little bit more suspect, of course. It just – I mean, you can't beat Father Time, and that's what it comes down to here. I think Cummings has looked ultra impressive to me. He's been getting better fight by fight. I like the way that he's actually coming out and looking, I mean, his aggressiveness, he looks to finish fights. I mean, Cummings isn't the type of guy that's going to look to outpoint you in a fight. He's got wrestling overall that, again, comparable to Coy's, that's going to be interesting because I think Cummings obviously is a better submission fighter. He's a more threat on, or the bigger threat on the ground when it comes to the ground battle here between him and Coy. But I still think that Coy's pure wrestling is might be a little bit better than Cummings. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But on the feet, it's where it's at with Cummings. I mean, I understand he just suffered a setback recently to the hands of Ponzinibbio in an ultra awesome, really, I mean, scrap back and forth battle that they were going, you know, they were throwing bombs. I mean, of course, Ponzinibbio won the battle, but you got to give credit to Cummings for hanging in there and showing toughness and showing his will to win. And he just got beat that night, but he bounced back and had an impressive win over Yokovlev, a guy that honestly, even Damian Maia couldn't submit. So that tells you how good Cummings can be on the ground and how sneaky good he is. But again, that killer instinct that I've seen, especially as of late from Cummings on the feet, I mean, he moves forward, he pushes a high pace, he looks to knock your head off. And I think you just mix everything, combine everything I just said about Cummings with his ability to finish on the ground, with his ability to actually finish on the feet, and he looks for the kill, he's probably going to end up finishing Coy. I think whether it's on the ground or whether it's on the feet, I think he's going to find a way within a 3-round fight to do so because he's become that much of a finisher in my opinion. So he's getting Coy at the right time, and I think he's got all sorts of momentum on his side. So it's hard not to pick against Cummings, and I do agree with the early action coming in on Cummings as well. I think he's going to win this fight.
Yeah, the main thing here is Nathan Coy is an excellent wrestler, but that's about it. And Zach Cummings should have enough wrestling to avoid being put on his back for extended periods of time. Cummings has a better chin than Coy. Cummings has more power on the feet than Coy. Cummings is overall the better striker. And Cummings has a better submission game. So unless Coy is able to just repeatedly take Cummings down and grind this out over the course of 3 rounds, I just don't see a path to victory for him. Cummings has a good chance to knock him out. Cummings could even catch him in a submission even off his back potentially. Cummings does have a seriously underrated ground game. He's pulled off some pretty nifty submissions so far in his UFC career. So overall, I just really like Zach Cummings here. I think that not only does he win, he probably wins easily. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Anthony Smith, who is 26-12, taking on Andrew Sanchez, who is 10-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Sanchez at minus 180, the comeback on Smith at plus 140. This is a fight that did get bet up, and it was a tough line to set. I mean, both these guys definitely get some respect from the bettors out there. Both these guys have been around for a while, especially Smith. I mean, he's been around for a long, long time. Even, you know, before he made his UFC debut or whatnot, people are well aware of what he was able to do on some of the other circuits or some of the other leagues out there. So Smith getting a shot into the UFC and winning some fights now is kind of what he deserves, because he's been one of those savvy vets that's been around for a long time. And again, I think he's another guy that right now is actually coming into his groove. I don't think Smith has ever been better, whether it's cardio, whether it's toughness across the board. I mean, offensively, Smith can beat you on the feet. He's got length over most middleweights as well. He's got decent wrestling. I mean, Smith is a total package. The problem with Smith is from time to time, he does fade in fights. He starts slowing down when it's a tough, hard fought battle. You got to kind of sweat with him in the later rounds. And he's always been a bit chinny. I mean, he's been knocked out, I think, six times throughout his career. So that's not what you want to see, you know, in a fighter that you're betting on, at least. So that's the concerns with Anthony Smith here. Although he has, you know, looked a bit better lately. And again, offensively, man, he's just a threat everywhere. So he's not an easy out at all with his length and with his ability. Sanchez, on the other hand, is another guy that's really improving. His wrestling, to me, is getting to the point where, man, I mean, he's just a tough out, and he's tough to beat in that aspect of the game. You're not going to probably out wrestle a guy like Sanchez unless you are an elite, you know, all American type of wrestler that's had a tremendous amount of success in the cage, at 185 pounds or whatnot. So maybe the Weidman's out there, or, you know, somebody of that nature, would be able to out wrestle somebody like Sanchez. But outside of those guys, outside of the elite level wrestler, Sanchez is going to pretty much out wrestle everybody. And I mean, he's proven that time and time again as well. Not just that though, he's more than a wrestler, more than a grappler. Sanchez is actually improving on the feet. He's got a little bit of an unorthodox striking ability where he moves around well, mixes kicks and punches well, and he has a little bit of power beyond his punches. So I think wherever the fight takes place here, Sanchez has an edge over Smith. I mean, pure striking wise, if it's going to be just a stand-up battle, although both of them are a little bit chinny, I think Smith's chin is worse. So I think Sanchez has the edge as far as chins go slightly, but Smith definitely has the edge overall on the feet over Sanchez. So he's not going to want to sit there and make this fight play out on the feet. He's going to want to take Smith, put him on his back, and win the fight on the ground. I think he's more than capable of doing so. Let's be honest here. In the last fight for Smith, I mean, against Mutafsic, he was actually losing that fight. It was because Elvis actually slowed down in that fight, where it left room for Smith to come back. Got to give him credit. He did what he had to do to end up coming back and winning that fight. But that being said, he was on his way to a loss if the cardio of Mutafsic was a little bit better there. So I don't think that's going to fail Sanchez here. I think he's going to be able to control and dictate where this fight goes and just basically outpoint, outgrind, or maybe even finish along the way as the fight progresses over Smith. So again, General Action has bet this fight up to minus 350 right now for Sanchez. Smith is at plus 260. So everybody's pretty much on the same page here. They believe, I'm pretty sure they believe that the wrestling is going to come into play and work here. And I do as well. So I'm going to pick Sanchez to win. I think he beats Smith and probably just grinds him out.
Yeah, this is actually a great fight. I mean, Anthony Smith looked excellent in his bout against Mutafsic. I did not think that he would outstrike Mutafsic, but he kind of weathered the early storm and then just took the fight to him and was able to get not just outstrike him, but finish him. Now, against Andrew Sanchez, I think this is going to be a really tough test for Smith. I mean, Sanchez has looked just downright dominant. When he was on The Ultimate Fighter, he was super well-rounded. He beat fighters at wherever they were weakest because he is just such of a jack-of-all-trades type of guy. And then in the UFC, he's looked excellent. He's shown crisp hands on the feet. His ground game is sharp. His wrestling is good. I mean, this guy can do it all. So against somebody like Anthony Smith, Sanchez probably will want to keep his distance on the feet, look for straight shots, and then wrestle when he gets an opportunity and try to avoid, you know, some of Smith's unique ground attacks. Smith does have some pretty dangerous ground game. I mean, the guy can toss up triangle chokes. He has long legs. He has a good jiu-jitsu background. But Smith is not really a wrestler. So I can see Sanchez getting top position on the ground. And as Nick mentioned, he might be able to just grind this out a little bit. The main thing here is I do think Smith hits a little bit harder than Sanchez. So Sanchez is going to have to be wary of his defense. But overall, Sanchez is just so well-rounded and so dangerous, and I think the wrestling will give him just enough of an edge to win a decision here. So I like Andrew Sanchez as well. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Devin Clark, who is 7-1, taking on Jake Collier, who is 10-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
I opened Clark -150 to come back on Collier at +110. And right now, looking over five dimes, looks like the line margins have tightened up a little bit. It's now Clark -145. The comeback on Collier is at +115. So two-way action coming in on this fight. A tough one. I mean, I know there's split action out there because I think a lot of people are not sure how this is going to play out. As am I, honestly. I mean, there's no real faith I have in either guy right now because of the defensive abilities of each fighter at times. I mean, they're both chinny. Collier seems to slow down a little bit more than Clark as well. They just have a lot of flaws, but offensively, they're both pretty talented, though. That's the thing here. So that's why it's going to make this an intriguing fight. First, I guess we got to start off by saying Collier is moving up to 205 pounds. So might be good for him. I mean, he's not going to be undersized here. He's actually going to be the bigger fighter. He's going to have some pure reach over Clark by 3 inches, I think, either way, in height and in actual reach itself. So Collier's not going to be outsized here against Clark. So he could very well, you know, fill out and look okay and not get out muscled or not get out bullied too much at the light heavyweight division. It might be a good fit for him. But that being said, I mean, Clark is, I think, overall the better athlete of the two. I trust Clark's conditioning a little bit better. I mean, he does tend to slow down as the fight goes on as well, but I still trust him as far as gas tank goes. It's weird with Collier, though, honestly. I mean, one fight you see him look really good, the next fight he just lets you down either, so, or two as well. So I don't know. It's just too many question marks surrounding him. Offensively, the guy's a stud. He can hurt you on the feet. He has some wrestling. He has ability to finish you on the ground as well. For Clark, I think he's less of a finisher a little bit. I mean, he does have, you know, a few finishes on his record, but I think he has the athletic ability, the speed, the power that he could finish a guy like Collier, especially because Collier's chin is a little bit suspect. But overall, I think he's just going to outpace you a little bit. And in this fight as well, I think he's going to try to do that with Collier, maybe slow him down a little bit, grind on him up against the cage and just kind of try to out muscle Collier and try to get the W that way. So I think in open space, it's either guys fight to win though. I think both of them are capable of knocking each other out. It's going to come down to the clinches. It's going to come down to the actual wrestling in this spot, which both, again, could go back and forth in that aspect as well. I just think as the fight progresses, Clark should have some advantages when it comes to all that stuff. So I slightly lean towards Clark. I think he is a little bit more of a promising prospect as well. So I think if he keeps on getting these W's and his chin holds up, we'll see where he goes. He definitely needs to improve a little bit, though. So nothing that I really feel confident about, but I have to lean a little bit more towards Clark.
My main issue with this fight is Jake Collier moving up. I know he was a really big middleweight, but, I mean, this was a guy that was a bit chinny at middleweight, too. I mean, when he got hit hard, and he got finished hard. So that's a bit concerning. Granted, Devin Clark hasn't exactly set the world on fire in his UFC run. He started really strong against, in his UFC debut, was winning the fight handily, and then he just got caught and by Alex Nicholson, who's basically a middleweight, and ended up getting finished. So yeah, he went back and won the next fight against Josh Stansbury, but that's definitely something in the back of my head that, you know, a guy that typically fights middleweight was able to knock him out in his UFC debut, and now Jake Collier, a really big middleweight that's moving up, is facing him. So for me, it's basically going to come down to whoever lands that first really big shot is probably going to win, because both guys have a bit shaky defense. Both guys do not have very good chins, and both guys hit really, really hard. So overall, I think Clark is a little bit of the better athlete, but Collier mixes it up a little bit more too. I mean, that last fight, the spinning kick was great. So, I mean, this guy can catch you with some stuff you don't see coming. Clark is a little bit easier to predict just because, you know, it's mostly just going to be the hands. But overall, this is going to be a close fight. And like I said, first guy that gets hit hard is probably going to lose. So I'm going to slightly side with Devin Clark just because Collier is moving up, even though he does have a slight size advantage despite moving up. I think Clark just is a little bit quicker and a little bit of a better athlete, and I think that that could help him here. So Clark is my pick. Now moving on to the main event of the fight pass prelims, We have a bantamweight contest between Aljamain Sterling, who is 12-2, and Augusto Mendez, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Sterling minus 215, the comeback on Mendez at plus 165. This fight has been bet up a little bit as well. Sterling is now minus 250 at five dimes, and Mendez is plus 190. Not really surprised by that either. Sterling has been an ultra popular fighter. I mean, really, since his debut, there's been a lot of hype and buzz around this guy. And in most cases, he's performed relatively well. Now, of course, he's coming in off of back-to-back losses against quality competition, though. I mean, you cannot really blame Sterling. Well, I mean, it's not a good thing that he lost his quality competition, but I'm saying the losses are respectable against the Sun Tzu, at least. And even Caraway, I mean, let's face it, for those of you guys that are Caraway haters out there, you cannot knock the talent that Caraway has. He's a tough out at bantamweight. So both losses are kind of respectable, and he was close in both those fights, really. I mean, he hung in there, especially I think he performed a little bit better against the Sun Tzu in his last fight. That was a close fight. So and the Sun Tzu is still, even though he's been, you know, not as active and whatnot, fighting through his injuries, he's still a very tough out. I mean, at the top of the game at bantamweight. So Sterling looking, I think, a little bit better, even despite that loss. I mean, it was good to see, because you need to see Sterling get pushed and tested at this point. His cardio has always been a little bit of a concern for me. He needs to really be in wars to the point it's going to, I think, I mean, make him become a better fighter, be better all around than he is. Because the natural ability, I mean, there's no way that you could deny Sterling. I mean, he's kind of big for the long class, for the weight class. He's actually long. He's going to have a decent reach advantage, I believe 5 or 6 inches over Mendez in this fight, even though I think he's only an inch taller. So the guy's athletic. He's got long limbs. He could use that reach a little bit. He's got some power on the feet. He's got good wrestling. We know that. Once on the ground, he's got the ability to finish by subs. He comes from a good camp. There's a lot to love about Sterling. I mean, he's at that right age too. He's 27 years old. So really now, right now is when he could hit his stride and really make some good decisions about his career and good wins and put together a quality run here, I think, and start climbing that ladder. So I think even despite the setbacks, I mean, this is an important fight for Sterling. And if he wins it, it's going to be a big notch on his resume as well. Mendez is starting to get some credit, starting to get some respect out there for his performance, especially in his last fight. I mean, a lot of people were counting him out. I know at least I was. There's a lot of people that also believed that he was going to beat Frankie Sainz in that last fight. So I credit you guys that for me, it was a tough fight. I really needed to see Mendez get pushed by a solid veteran like Sainz, and he did that. I mean, it was a close fight, of course. I mean, the kind of fight that, honestly, three other judges were sitting there, they could have scored it the other way, but needless to say, it's hard to argue that he didn't deserve that win. I mean, I think Mendez, obviously, we all know that he has a grappling background. He's a tremendous talent underground. His wrestling, his takedown ability in most cases is actually pretty good. And then once he's underground, I mean, forget about it. You're done pretty much. I mean, he's going to find a way to finish you. So he's that good underground, but he's getting better on the feet as well. I mean, his boxing is coming around to the point where his hands are actually a threat. I mean, you need to watch out for this guy. He's got a little bit of power on his feet. He's putting his combos together nicely. He's been working with a lab, so that's really proven him a good training camp for him with his partners that he has, and it's really helping him get better and better. So there's a lot of good things to like about Mendez, and I think it's going to be a tough fight for Sterling. I think pretty much all of Sterling fights end up being closer than we all expect at times, unless he goes out there and blows somebody away in like a minute or two. But the fight plays out like I think it will against Mendez here, it's going to be a war. So I do believe it's going to be a close, competitive fight. Mendez is going to hang in there and really be a tough test for Sterling, but Sterling needs to pass this test, and I think he probably will. I think he just basically barely edges his fight out. So it is a dog or pass situation, no doubt to me. There's no way I could lay 250 on Sterling from what we've seen overall in his career that far. Even though I do have ultimate respect for him, and I think he is a very talented fighter, he's going to have his hands full against Mendez. I do think he comes away with a win, but I think it's going to be a sweat. So again, the value is probably on the underdog here, but I'm going to pick Sterling to actually win this fight. I think he can probably get the job done.
This fight is so tricky for me because it's definitely a bit of a trap fight for Sterling. I mean, he's the guy that had all the hype. He was a guy that people were saying could be the next champion, and now he's lost two in a row. And Augusto Mendez is no tune-up fight. Mendez has a ground game that is really going to be a threat to Sterling, especially considering Sterling's biggest strength is his wrestling. Mendez might be able to, you know, tie him up in knots a little bit on the canvas. And then on the feet, yeah, Sterling's improved, but that's not his biggest strength. And he was able to hold his own against a Sun Tzu, but he still lost that fight pretty clearly. So, and that fight pretty much took place entirely on the feet. And Mendez, honestly, his stand-up looked great in his last fight. So this is a fight that could definitely be a bit of a trap. Sterling is super talented, but Mendez might have the skills to be his kryptonite a little bit. If Sterling is going for takedowns, Mendez is going to be constantly threatening with sweeps and submissions. And if this stays standing, Mendez could very well outstrike Sterling. So overall, I'm a little concerned, especially with Sterling's buddy, Chris Weidman, you know, coming off of a really tough loss as well. The team Cerro Longo is struggling right now. So, you know, I think I'm going to, you know, shock people here a little bit, and I'm going to pick Augusto Mendez to pull off the upset. Now, moving on to the preliminary card on Fox, we have a flyweight contest between Luis Smolka, who is 11-3, and Tim Elliott, who is 14-7-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I'm up in Elliott -230 to come back on Smolka at +170. Right now, it's actually Elliott -290 to come back on Smolka is +230. So more support coming in Elliott's way. Another tough line to set because, man, before his setback to Borg, a lot of people were ridiculously high on Smolka. Meaning, again, no disrespect to Smolka because he's definitely a talented guy. And I think he is one of the best flyweights in the world for sure. But, I mean, everybody just had Smolka on this pedestal that he couldn't be out-grappled, you know, and his stand-up with his length. Everything about Smolka was just a little bit enhanced, I think, overall. And then Borg brought everything back down to reality. But you can't take anything away from Smolka. I think Borg is just that much better than most people on the ground. I mean, the scrambling ability, his ability to control once he gets on top, everything about Borg you got to love. And Elliott is similar in a lot of ways to Borg, but he's not Borg. So that's why this fight, and even this line's a little bit off, in my opinion, right now, because obviously the fight with Borg was a little bit tighter. Now, of course, a lot of people are going to be giving Elliott a ton of respect because of his performance against Demetrius Johnson in the last fight. I mean, Elliott early on in that fight was looking good. He had Demetrius Johnson in some trouble. I mean, it was upset alert for sure going on there for a while, but DJ did what he did, did what he usually does and just, you know, adapted, came through and ended up getting the W there, but still awesome performance against pound for pound, in my opinion, the best fighter in the world, Demetrius Johnson. Elliott hung in there and did well. And Elliott's one of those guys that he's always been a little bit underrated throughout his career. I mean, his losses are all against respectable fighters. I mean, he pushes a high pace overall. He just has that relentless style. He's got a good attitude about him. There's not much to not like about Elliott, honestly. And I think he has a slight edge over Smolka here in this fight as well. I don't really trust Smolka's chin all that much, even though he hasn't been officially knocked out. He's been dropped. He's been rocked. It could definitely happen again here. Even though Elliott doesn't have a tremendous amount of power, I think he could still – he's got the speed and enough power to maybe do a little bit of damage on the feet for Smolka, even though Smolka's going to have a reach advantage and probably the overall striking advantage. I'm not sure, again, against pure power, but, I mean, Smolka's definitely a tough guy to strike with because of his length and because of his clinching ability and all that stuff as well. So it's not going to be easy out for Elliott on the feet, but I think it's something that he could probably possibly edge out there. And then, of course, the takedown ability. If Elliott's able to get Smolka on his back and keep him there without losing position, without Smolka kind of reversing things and transitioning out and getting top position or taking his back, then obviously he's going to have some success. But I'm not so sure he can do that. Again, I think Elliott ends up finding himself sometimes on the losing ends of some scrambles where Borg may not. So I realize people are thinking that this might be a very similar fight, but I'm not so sure. I think it's going to be a lot tighter than this. I think it's going to kind of go back and forth. Now, both these guys are good enough offensively that I wouldn't be surprised of an early finish either way. I mean, if Smolka subs Elliott, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, Smolka has that kind of ability that he could sub most people at 125 pounds. Or if Elliott catches Smolka along the way, wouldn't be shocked there either. Both of these guys are quality fighters. But I guess the overall edge, you do have to side a little bit with Elliott because he seems to have a little bit more advantages in this fight. And I think one of them is going to be – he'll be stronger and he should be able to control whether, you know, he gets on top or not on the ground. And then again, I think he's got the speed and a little bit of power edge on the feet as well. So I slightly lean towards Elliott, but it's another dog or pass situation here. There's no way I would lay that price currently where it's almost 3-1 on Elliott. I mean, if you're going to consider betting this fight, you got to consider the dog, I think, or just leave it alone. So just my 2 cents on that one, but I do like Elliott to probably edge out a very close competitive fight.
If this fight had taken place like a year ago, I probably would have thought Smolka had a good chance. Smolka was on a bit of a run. He was approaching the top 5 or 6 of the division, and Elliott, you know, he wasn't even in the UFC, but Elliott had a great run on The Ultimate Fighter. He had a great fight against Demetrius Johnson, and Smolka's been reeling a little bit. I mean, Moreno shocked him, somebody that, you know, was the last seed on Elliott's season of The Ultimate Fighter, and then Smolka just got beat down by Ray Borg. I know Borg's really talented, but, I mean, that fight was not even close. So, in this fight here against Elliott, man, I think Smolka could be in trouble. Smolka's not a great striker. He has decent kicks, but I don't think that's anything that'll threaten Elliott. Elliott has a very awkward striking style that he can just wing stuff. He throws a lot of spinning attacks. His kicks are decent. And then on the ground, Elliott has excellent wrestling, and he can get top control and just start beating people down from top position with barrages of punches. And he has a decent submission game as well. I mean, he is just a very, very aggressive fighter that is constantly attacking, even if it doesn't make sense at times. So I just don't know if Smolka will be able to fend him off. I mean, maybe Smolka stops attacks 1, 2, and 3, but then attack 4 is just going to slip right through his defenses. And I could potentially see Tim Elliott not just winning this fight, but finishing it. So I really do think Tim Elliott is a talented fighter. He's making the best of his second chance here in the UFC, and I think he wins this fight. So my pick is Tim Elliott. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Bobby Green, who is 23-7, taking on Rashid Magomedov, who is 19-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Magomedov -260 to come back on Green at +180. Wasn't quite enough. Magomedov is now -370 to come back on Green at +280. So set the line a little bit lower. I expected Green to get somewhat respect. But again, I mean, based on what we've seen lately from Bobby Green, you can't possibly kind of like him right now in this fight. I mean, earlier in his career, not too long ago, he was out. Well, he's been out right now since June of 2016, his knockout loss. So about a year ago, almost a year or so, he got knocked out, of course. And then before that, though, he had a torn quad. And then after that, he had a torn ACL. And then he returned to fight Poirier and got knocked out, obviously, earlier in that fight that I was just mentioning. So, I mean, he had a lot of time off. He was on the shelf for a while, injured, and then he comes back, gets knocked out. Doesn't sit well for me. And then, of course, he pulled out of a fight for personal issues against Berkman as well. So we're just not sure where Green is mentally, where he is physically at this point of his career. And it's a shame because, man, I mean, for a while there, Green was looking like he was climbing that ladder at 155, and he deserved it. I mean, he fought against quality competition. His win over Josh Thompson, I think, is probably the highlight of his career, honestly. I mean, that's a tough win, even though it was a close fight, controversial somewhat or whatever, because it was a split decision type of fight. Still, Green, I mean, he's been performing at that level for a while now, and you'd like to see him kind of get to that point because it's all hard work. So he's able to compete with some of the top-tier lightweights for sure out there. It's just stylistically, I'm not sure if Magomedov is a good fight for him. Magomedov is, of course, I mean, what could you say about the guy? He's a sniper on the feet. The guy is ultra talented everywhere the fight takes place. His takedown defense is excellent. His offensive wrestling is actually pretty good as well, probably a little bit underrated. The guy has a little bit of a sub game. He doesn't really utilize it all that much, but he's more of a sniper that's going to kind of outpoint you, possibly hurt you on the feet along the way, but most of the time he's just going to be able to keep the fight upright and just basically outpoint you and get a somewhat clear decision type of win. But again, I mean, his punches and kicks definitely hurt along the way too. So I think he does have the ability to finish Green, especially right now, this Bobby Green that we're seeing in 2017 with all the question marks around it. So I understand the early action on Magomedov, especially right now. And of course, I should mention, I guess, that Magomedov is obviously trying to get back on track because he suffered the first loss in a little while for him as he lost to Dariush in a surprising battle somewhat to me because Dariush, I mean, how dominant Dariush was able to be in that fight. So I think it was a wake-up call for Magomedov. Before that, he was kind of on a roll. I mean, cruising through some solid competition, and then he just got a wake-up call. So I expect Magomedov to bounce back here, get back on the winning track, and this is a perfect fight for him to do so against Bobby Green. I think he could maybe even get a highlight reel type of knockout along the way. Part of me wants to see Green kind of rebound here, at least be competitive in this fight, so we see him back in the mix at lightweight because, again, he has his fans. He has people that kind of hate against him because of his style, but I like Green and I'd like to see him kind of get back on the winning track and then, you know, get matched up in some pretty competitive fights along the way too as well. So we'll see how this fight plays out, but it's hard not to like Magomedov in this fight. I do think he probably wins this fight.
Bobby Green is a fun fighter, but I just don't think this is a good matchup for him. I mean, if you watch him fight, he kind of sits back. He takes advantage of fighters that are more counter strikers, but at times he can be inactive as well, looking for that big shot. One thing that I think might help him with judges, but overall doesn't help him in fights, is he just tries to no-sell his opponent's offense, like just shakes it off, like it, you know, that didn't hurt, whatever, you got nothing. And he just kept doing that in his last fight against Dustin Poirier until he got blasted a couple times and then finished. So, I mean, it was a long layoff for him. He didn't look very good. Maybe he'll be a little bit better now that he's back into the mix a little bit. But man, I mean, this guy hasn't won a fight in almost 3 years, because of, the long layoffs and the current 2-fight losing streak. Granted, those are excellent opponents that he was facing that, were able to keep him from winning with Barboza and Poirier. But, Rashid Magomedov's not much of a step down. Magomedov is a great striker. He can mix it up. He's accurate. He's technical. He, has a good ground game as well. So I just don't see a lot of places that Bobby Green is going to find success here, especially if he's not willing to engage enough. Because if you want to beat Rashid Magomedov, you really got to go after him. And I just don't know if Green is going to be able to do that. That's just not really his style. So overall, I think Magomedov will just be a little bit more accurate. He'll defend a little bit better. And I think he'll have a little bit more output. And that should just help him eke out a decision here. I think this is a fight Magomedov can and should win, especially with the place that Bobby Green seems to be headed. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Patrick Williams, who is 8-4, taking on the long-awaited UFC newcomer Tom Duquesnoy, who is 14-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I up in Duquesnoy -385 to come back on Williams at +265. Unfortunately, it wasn't quite enough because right now it's Duquesnoy -470 to come back on Williams is at +345. So needless to say, the hype on Duquesnoy is legit. I mean, he's out there. He's a hype prospect. Bama 145 and 135 champion. So he's a featherweight and bantamweight champion for Bama, a dual title holder. And the level competition outside the UFC for a young fighter has actually been pretty good. So it's not like he's out there fighting bums either. So this kid is only 23 years old. He's talented. He has everything in his arsenal. He's training right now at Greg Jackson's camp off and on as well. Of course, he's been out there training at some other top camps, but he's become more of a mainstay, I guess, at Jackson's camp, which that's what you want to see. At a 23-year-old fighter like Duquesnoy, I mean, with all the ability that he's shown, man, I mean, sky's the limit for this kid. So they're giving him a tough test, though. I know Williams probably isn't going to get the respect out there that he kind of deserves from you guys. You guys are going to look at him and look at his knockout loss to Beal and think this guy's a bum or whatnot. But honestly, athletically, Williams is a threat. I mean, he's got long reach for the weight class. And on the hands, on the feet, he's got good hands. He's got the ability to knock you out because he's got such powerful punches. And he's so wild with his aggression at times. I mean, he's the type of fighter that would just explode and, you know, drop some hands on you and then back away and or whatnot and just kind of restart. So you got to watch his bombs on the feet for sure. But his wrestling ability, Williams, that's what's kind of, I guess, the feature of his fighting style, definitely. And then, of course, his submission ability. I mean, if you look at him, how quick he was able to get his hands around Perez's neck and sub him out. So that was pretty impressive, to say the least. So Williams is not exactly an easy test for Duquesnoy, but at the same time, it's definitely a test he could pass because Williams does have his flaws. Obviously, his chin a little bit is suspect. He does slow down as the fight progresses a little bit. So even if he's a front runner round one and he's given Duquesnoy a very tough, challenging test, by round two, it's going to be a different fight. Duquesnoy's aggression is going to keep up and it's going to be steady. Even though he does look a little bit tired as he goes, Duquesnoy still puts on a very high pace, even if it gets in round two and he's going to be the aggressor there. So I think he finishes Williams. I mean, possibly in round one, maybe round two, possibly round three. It depends on how tough Williams is and, you know, how, you know, game he is for this fight or whatnot, but it's just a fight that if Duquesnoy loses, it's going to be really a setback for the UFC as well, because you know that they want this kid to come in here and get a quality win and then move on. So I think we're going to probably see a highlight reel finish. And I mean, that's what everybody's expecting. I think that's what we're probably going to get. So I'm curious to see how far this kid can get because, man, with all the potential that he has, I mean, it's such a well-rounded game. I think he's going to get far. So my pick is Duquesnoy to win and probably inside the distance over Williams.
Yeah, if you're familiar with the top prospects that hadn't signed to the UFC yet, Tom Duquesnoy is a guy that was right at the top of your list for probably the past couple years. I mean, this is a guy that's been in talks to sign with the UFC since about 2014, but he wanted to, you know, keep improving, working on his skills and come to the UFC when he felt he was ready. We've seen this a couple times with some other guys on the UFC roster. Like Jim Manua, who wanted to wait a couple fights, and look where he is now. He's one of the top light heavyweights on the roster. So
A guy like Tom DeQuesnoy, you know, still just 23 years old. He's been one of the top prospects in all of MMA for the last 3 or 4 years. So, I mean, this guy is an elite talent. He is excellent on the ground. He has solid wrestling. He has great submissions. He has solid striking, good power. I mean, he is the complete package. And honestly, at 135 pounds, he's going to be very dangerous. I mean, his one career loss was to current UFC featherweight Makhwan Amir Khani, and that was at featherweight, against a guy that was massive. So at bantamweight, DeQuesnoy is undefeated. He, as Nick mentioned, he was a multiple weight class champ, and I think the sky's the limit with him. We're going to learn a lot about him here against Patrick Williams, because Williams is an aggressive fighter with a lot of power, comes from a good wrestling background, and he can, you know, he can really slug it out. He has heavy hands and his knees can be vicious. So this is a guy that, DeQuesnoy, you know, he'll have to be ready to go right from the onset, because Williams might just come right at him and try to take his head off. But if DeQuesnoy can kind of weather that and settle in, and the bright lights of the UFC's dim down a little bit, then I don't think there's a chance that Williams really has, other than just a puncher's chance. And I expect that not only does DeQuesnoy win this fight, but I expect him to dominate this fight and probably finish it. So my pick is going to be Tom DeQuesnoy. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card in the heavyweight division. We have Alexander Volkov, who is 27-6, taking on Roy Nelson, who is 22-13. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Volkov, minus 140, the comeback on Nelson, at even money. Right now, not too far off. It looks like at fivedimes.eu, it's currently Volkov minus 150. The comeback on Nelson is at plus 120. So a little bit more action coming in Volkov's way, but there is two action in this fight, and there will continue to be two action in this fight as well, regardless where the line closes. There's going to be some action coming in on Nelson's knockout ability. I mean, that's what he does best. Nelson knocks people out. We all know that. He has a chance to knock Volkov off out here as well. Volkov, I don't want to say he's got a suspect chin, but he has been knocked out before in the past as well. And I mean, if he's not careful here with that, you know, tall fighters have that tall man D, we like to call it, whatnot. It's not good to see that, especially against a knockout artist like Nelson. So always a threat. But overall, I mean, if you look at talent, skill, age, I mean, Volkov is 28 where Nelson's 40. Nelson's definitely on the decline. He's past his prime. We all know that as well. This is a good spot for Volkov to keep on improving. And I'm saying keep on improving because if you look at his last fight against Tim Johnson, the Bellator Volkov would have probably lost that fight. I mean, he's had some setbacks against guys that can put him on his back, that can out-wrestle him, that can control him a little bit. And against Tim Johnson, he's obviously proven that he's been working a lot on his takedown defense, and he knows that that's kind of one of his, you know, his biggest burden, I guess, as far as defensively goes. He needs to keep the fight upright. And once he does keep the fight upright, I mean, offensively on the feet, the guy has some talent. He's got some length over most. He's going to have a huge reach advantage here over Nelson in this fight. So he's going to be able to keep the fight on the outside, land on Nelson where it's going to have – it's going to be a lot harder for Nelson to close that gap, close the distance. Of course, even in the clinch, I mean, Nelson against tall fighters typically eats a lot of knees along the way as well. So I'm sure Volkov will do some damage in the clinch area as well. So it's really Volkov's fight to win or lose here. I think he's going to be able to outpoint Nelson on the cards. I mean, we all know if Nelson hits the scorecards, I mean, even though lately he's actually been doing a little bit better, he's got a couple decisions to, you know, kind of to go his way or whatnot. And I think actually, his loss to Lewis should have been a win. Honestly, it was that kind of fight that you could have gave it to him in that spot. So Nelson has been performing better on the cards recently, is what I'm trying to spit out here. But still, he's not going to do so against Volkov. Volkov will outpoint Nelson overall in the fight. I don't know if he's going to be able to stop Nelson, but I think he's going to be able to at least clearly win the rounds enough where it's not going to be very controversial as well. So Nelson does have a puncher's chance. He could knock out Volkov and get the W that way. But if he doesn't do that, I just don't see him winning a decision over Volkov. So Volkov, I think, has the ability, even though Nelson is, his chin is pretty granite throughout his career. Maybe he gets a finish inside the distance with his length, with the fact that, I mean, Nelson is 40 years old now. You never know. I mean, at any moment that chin could totally go. So Volkov has more ways to win this fight, and I expect them to probably come through here. So my pick is Volkov to win.
Yeah, this is a fight that Volkov should win, but you always have to be concerned about Roy Nelson and his power. The Stefan Struve fight comes to mind. I mean, Volkov is a tall fighter that fights long and stands up straight. And if Roy Nelson can come in over the top and crack with that big right hand with an overhand right, man, Volkov would probably just go down in a heap like so many others before him. But you also have to consider who Roy Nelson has been doing that to over the last few years. And he hasn't been doing it to many. He has been on a bit of a slide. People have kind of figured him out. They know, just circle away from the power, pick him apart from distance, maybe go for takedowns. Obviously, Volkov's not going to be going for takedowns, but that's something that others have done. And just wait for him to slow down a little bit, because Roy Nelson has that explosive power early, but as the fight wears on, I mean, he's kind of bent over, heaving. He's having a lot of trouble. And against big power strikers, Nelson even, you know, works for the wrestling. But, I mean, in Volkov's UFC debut against Tim Johnson, he was able to fend off Johnson's wrestling for the most part. And honestly, Johnson is a better wrestler than Roy Nelson. So if Volkov can fend off Johnson, I think he can fend off Nelson. And then from there, it just depends on whether or not Nelson can crack with the big right hand and whether Volkov is able to either block it or just get out of the way. And Volkov is so long that he should just be able to get out of the way. I mean, he's got an 8-inch reach advantage here, and he's 7 inches taller. Now, that hasn't worked for everybody against Nelson. Again, Stefan Struve comes to mind. But, man, Volkov, as long as he fights smart, fights long, circles away from the power, and stuffs the takedown attempts, he should walk away with this. I don't know if he'd get a finish or anything, but Volkov definitely has the ability to just outwork Roy Nelson and then annoy him with a lot of pitter-patter shots from the outside. So my pick is going to be Alexander Volkov, probably by decision. Now moving on to the main card, we have a featherweight contest between Jeremy Stephens, who is 25-13, and Renato Moicano, who is 10-0-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened Stevens -165 to come back on Moicano at +125, and it's quickly been bet up to Stevens -240 to come back on Moicano +180. I honestly have to say I'm not surprised that the action came in Stevens' way either. I mean, he's definitely going to get the more respect in this fight from overall, from the bettors out there, from the MMA community in general out there. He's going to be the respected fighter. I mean, he's the one that's been throughout his career the dangerous striker that is, if he could keep the fight upright, I mean, a lot of people could be in some serious trouble. And this is a big step up for Moicano in competition as well. I know he's coming off of an impressive win over to Hugoff, and it was a close competitive battle, but and he deserved to get that victory there. But still, Stevens, I think, is even a notch higher than that, obviously. And he gets a win over Stevens, it's definitely going to be a really solid notch on his resume. So step up for competition from Moicano. A lot of people don't think he's going to be able to pass this test. I don't know. I mean, obviously, we know that Stevens has improved tremendously through the years and stuff that he's lacked. I mean, his submission defense, for example, early on in his career, I think that that was definitely a flaw of his. He's gotten better to the point where, I mean, we just witnessed Oliveira, how good of a ground game he has and how he's capable of really submitting anybody. In most cases, he's just coming off of an impressive submission win over Brooks, which a lot of you guys out there took to win by sub. So hats off to you guys out there. But that being said, he was able to weather the storm against Oliveira, a grappler like that, and not get submitted in a 3-round battle. He did lose that fight, but still impressive that, you know, scrambling underground and being in tough spots against a guy like Oliveira and you survived it says a lot about your submission defense. So credit Stevens for improving those areas. He's always had a puncher's chance on the feet. He's got tremendous power. He's gotten better. His takedown defense has gotten better. He's just really come into his own. I mean, he wants to fight high caliber competition. And of course, I mean, sometimes he doesn't, get over that hump or whatnot, but overall he's definitely, I don't even want to call him a gatekeeper. He's above and beyond that. So he's just a tough out for a lot of people. But what I think people are missing the boat here on Moicano a little bit. I think that he's a stud more than a grappler that he's kind of well known for. He's known for his grappling style. So a lot of people are suspecting if Oliveira didn't sub Stevens, then how can Moicano? Because, of course, Oliveira has that special sub game. Moicano does as well. I mean, he definitely has a special sub game once on the ground. If you look at him, how quick he transitions to take your back, or his ability to just scramble in a good position on the ground real quick and threaten is amazing. I mean, the guy's quick on the floor. He's long. So when you have skill and you have length, even on the ground, I mean, I think it's definitely to your advantage there as well. So on the feet, he's going to have a reach advantage over Stevens. I mean, as far as height, he's going to have a couple inches. And I think his reach, he's only going to have an inch or two, not a big difference there on the feet, but still, I think he's going to be the longer fighter. And then if you look closer at Moicano's stand-up game, I mean, his defense isn't that bad. I think he actually holds his hands tight. I mean, as the fight progresses a little bit, he does tend to drop his hands like most fighters, get a little bit tired, and he cannot afford to do that against Stevens. His defense has to be on par here if he's going to win this fight. But other than that, I mean, he pushes a high pace. He's got the fighter's mentality that you like to see. I mean, he's a type of fighter that has no quit in him. He's a type of fighter that wants to win. He wants to test himself out there. He's been asking the UFC matchmakers for, I mean, top 15, top 10, you know, as high level of competition as he can get. So I think that's why they gave him a little bit of, you know, in his last fight of a test into Hugov. And now they put him in, he passed that test. So they gave him Stevens. So they're moving him up the ladder quick. He's asking for it. And they're giving it to him because he has the ability to perform well. And I think in this fight here, it's going to be close. I think it's going to be a lot harder than people think, even for Stevens, even if it stays upright. If Moicano's not able to get Stevens on the ground because his takedown defense is pretty solid, I still think Moicano pushes a high enough pace where he'll hang with Stevens on the feet. I think that he'll land his own shots as well. He might not have the knockout power Stevens have, obviously, but he's still going to be a threat on the feet. And I think his will to win will carry him and make this fight very competitive. But I think what Stevens has to watch out for is – again, just because he didn't get submitted by Oliveira doesn't mean he won't get submitted here by Moicano. I think Moicano is really a different type of grappler. We don't know how well they're going to really match up with each other on the ground until they get in there. So, I mean, we've seen it before. And again, I mentioned earlier, a guy like Damian Maia wasn't able to submit, or just unfortunately that day, because I'm sure more times than not he is able to submit a guy like Yokovlev, right? And then you see a guy like Cummings come out there and submit Yokovlev. So you just don't know. I mean, sometimes better grapplers don't always perform their best that day, and it doesn't mean that you're going to pass a test against a less grappler, if that makes any sense here. So what my point is, just because Oliveira didn't sub Stevens, it doesn't mean that Moicano won't sub him. I mean, if you look how quickly, again, he transitions and tries to attack with submissions, I mean, he's not going to give Stevens much time to react once it is on the ground. So all this points to a very competitive, very interesting fight, and I think it's a fight Moicano can actually pull off the upset win and get. So I am going against the public grain in this one. I think Moicano is a dog or pass situation, and he probably does have a little bit of value, especially you're plus 180 right now over Stevens. If he doesn't get knocked out, I really think Moicano could win by decision or possibly finish Stevens along the way. So I think he has more ways to win, and I think everybody's just totally underestimating the fact that he can win this fight. And I think a lot of people are expecting Stevens to win by knockout, which wouldn't be a shocker, but I just don't think it happens. So I'm going to side with Moicano here.
Jeremy Stevens is a very talented featherweight with a lot of power. He's been impressive since dropping down, but man, I think Moicano might be a guy that is on the rise here. I mean, he looked so good in his UFC debut in a short notice fight. I mean, not many guys come to the UFC fully equipped to step into the bright lights and just start competing right away against top guys, but Moicano is so well-rounded and so sharp that he just slid right in and immediately looked like a guy that could be a contender. And then his next fight, they throw him right into the fire against Tukhugov, a guy that a lot of people thought could be a contender, and Moicano was able to win a decision. I mean, it went by split decision, but literally everybody scoring the fight in the media gave it to Moicano. So, you know, he's looked really good so far in two UFC fights. Moicano has a little bit of reach on Stevens, and even though he doesn't pack the same type of power that Stevens has, he does throw aggressively. He throws at a bit of a higher volume. And, man, that ground game is something that you really, really have to respect. And as long as Moicano's stand-up is continuing to evolve and improve, there's going to be an opening potentially for him to get the fight to the ground because Stevens has to respect the stand-up. Maybe that he just is trying to worry about whatever Moicano's throwing at him and then just gets off balance just that 1 millisecond. And that might be all it takes because Moicano is so slick at taking people's backs. I mean, he can do it in a millisecond. This guy is a very, very talented grappler and he has tremendous transitions and he can really catch you off guard if you just leave one tiny opening. Another thing you really have to consider is Moicano's kicks against Tukhugov. He torched Tukhugov's legs with some brutal low kicks, and those are only going to get stronger and better as he continues to progress in his MMA career. So overall, I mean, Stevens is going to be dangerous. Moicano might be susceptible to a huge looping right hand that Stevens likes to throw, and Stevens is capable of getting late finishes, and Moicano's hands were dropping a little bit by the end of the third round of his last fight. So if there's a really good chance for Stevens to finish this fight, that it could happen late in the third round. But overall, I just really like Moicano. I think he's at the right place right now in his career to pick up a huge, huge quality win and get himself into the top 15 UFC featherweight rankings. So my pick is going to be Moicano to pull off the slight upset. Now moving all the way up to the middleweight division, we have Jacare Souza, who is 24-4 with one no contest, taking on Robert Whittaker, who is 18-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Jacare Souza, minus 190, the comeback on Whittaker at plus 150. Right now, Jacare Souza, minus 230, the comeback on Whittaker is plus 190. So a little bit more action coming in Jacare's way. I get that. Look, to me, right now, Jacare is probably the best middleweight in the UFC roster, and he's probably the uncrowned champion. And I know you could say he lost to Romero and whatnot. That was a controversial type of decision. We all know that as well. So Jacare total ability right now, he probably is the best. I mean, you can't deny it. He's probably the best middleweight in the world right now, I think. I know we don't get to see him be as active as we all like, but I mean, skill set wise, we all know that he's one of the best grapplers ever to grace MMA. I mean, in the UFC or not, even, you know, prior to coming into the UFC, the guy was just, he's always been a lethal, lethal competitor in the grappling world, the best ever. So in the cage, it's translated well for him, but it's not just that. I mean, the guy has the wrestling that he's able to get the fight to the ground when he wants usually as well. I mean, to top level wrestling. And then of course his stand up has gotten to the point where he's no slouch on the feet either. He's got knockout power. He can bring it on the feet. I mean, he doesn't shy away from exchanges because in most cases he wins them. I mean, if you look back at the Musasi fight for just one quick example, I mean, Musasi was so worried about the takedowns in that fight. Jacare had a lot of success on the feet in that fight against a very good striker in Musasi. So, I mean, Jacare is just a special, special talent, and he's a very difficult out. The only bad thing about Jacare that you can ever say, really, is his chin is definitely suspect. I mean, even though he's only been knocked out a couple times in his career officially, he's been rocked in several fights to the point where, of course, he's recovered and been able to turn fights around, you know, at times. But that is not what you want to see in a fighter, especially when you're going up against a pure knockout artist like Whittaker. And that's exactly what the guy is. I mean, of course, he's moved up to the middleweight division after, you know, a so-so run or whatnot, a disappointing for him, I would say, a little bit of a disappointing run. He had his success at welterweight, of course, as well. But, you know, stepping into middleweight here, it looks like he's got the speed. You know, he's filled out well enough that he's not getting out-muscled by a lot of these guys either, because he's a pretty strong guy. And then, of course, his knockout power is just special. I mean, he barely touches you, and you're going to be feeling it for sure and possibly go out. So basically what you have here is a throwback fight. You have your grappler versus striker. Now, of course, I just explained that Jacare Souza can strike with even strikers. I mean, I don't know if he's going to want to do that with Whittaker here, even though he could have some success. Whittaker has been tagged. His defense on the feet at times is a little bit disappointing because, I mean, he's a pretty tough guy, so he absorbs punishment well, but he gets his face busted up. And I mean, all it takes is one hard shot, and a guy like Jacare could definitely even knock Whittaker out. I don't think it plays out that way. I think if it stays up on the feet, Whittaker wins this fight because I trust his chin a little bit more than Jacare. And I think Whittaker, I mean, that's his clear path to victory, is just knocking Jacare out before the fight gets to the ground. But I'm not so sure it gets to the ground, you know, or it doesn't get to the ground, or so I should say, because again, Jacare's wrestling is that good. And even though Whittaker's takedown defense is outstanding, I mean, he's just facing a different level of fighter here. I can revert back a little bit to a guy like Musasi, where we all know his takedown defense is outstanding as well. Jacare was able to get the fight to the ground and out wrestle there as well. So that's the thing. We don't know how well they're going to match up in that area. If Jacare is able to get Whittaker down, he's going to win this fight and probably make it look relatively easy. If he's not able to get this fight to the ground, he's probably going to get knocked out. So it's pretty clear cut to me. I wouldn't lay the price. This is one of those dog and pass situations again, because how could you really trust Jacare's chin over a pure knockout artist like Whittaker that has good takedown defense? It's not a smart formula to go out there and lay the price, especially where it's at now. It's a dog or pass situation, but it's still very difficult for me to pick against Jacare Souza, because he, in my opinion, is really the most well-rounded and the best middleweight right now at this time in the world. So I'm going to pick Jacare to win, even though I am worried about him getting knocked out.
This could definitely be a trap fight for Jacare, but man, if you factor in the ground game, you have to favor him. On the feet, Robert Whittaker can definitely hold his own with Jacare. I mean, Whitaker's on an incredible run since moving up to the middleweight division, but Jacare also is a talented striker. I mean, this guy actually gave Musasi a run for his money on the feet, was actually getting the better of Musasi on the feet before submitting him, which to me is still just mind-blowing considering how good Musasi is. And then on the ground, man, if he gets on top of you, you are done. You are just straight up done. Now, Whitaker, though, he does pack some serious heat. He is calm under pressure. I mean, Derek Brunson came out just wild and crazy in that last fight, and Whitaker just weathered that storm, stayed patient, kept his defenses up, and then once he found some openings, he just started cracking and was able to get an impressive first round finish. Now, granted, they have a similar opponent there in the fact that Jacare just massacred Brunson when they fought, and that was early in Jacare's run, before he was even in the UFC. So, Jacare definitely is a guy that is capable of just finishing a fight at any point on the feet, on the ground, you name it. Where Whitaker definitely, he needs to get this fight, to keep it standing, and then to get the better of Jacare, which is not a guarantee. So basically for me, if this stays standing, it's about even, and if it goes to the floor, Jacare dominates. So I just have to side with Jacare here. He has more ways to win. He's just a little bit more talented overall, and this is a guy that could still, at some point in the next year, be the UFC middleweight champion. So I'm going to side with Jacare. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the women's strawweight division, we have Rose Namajunas, who is 6-3. Taking on Michelle Waterson, who is 14-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Tough fight. Really tough fight, even line setting-wise. Minus 135, Namajunas was my opener. Waterson, minus 105. So virtually pick them with a slight lean towards Namajunas. Right now, it just actually started moving a little bit more today, but it was basically about that where I opened it earlier. Now it's minus 150, though, at the time of the recording for Namajunas, and Waterson is at plus 130. So a little bit more action coming in Rose's way as we speak, if I'm looking across the Don Best screen here. Another tough one because both of these ladies get a tremendous amount of respect for sure. I mean, the karate hottie, as everybody likes to call Waterson. I mean, definitely I can understand why. I mean, she's not hard to look at either, and she competes at a high level. I mean, it's just hard not to like Waterson. I mean, her ability, you know, everything about her. She's very marketable. She's, you know, a sweet person that's, you know, mother type of role model type of fighter, everything, all the good stuff, attributes you could say about her. She trains at a good camp with Jackson's. But the ability for her in the cage is pretty good because she does have that striking background where she's got clean technique. She's smart. She can be effective on the feet. But more so than anything, I think her ground game, especially offensively, as we've seen against Van Zandt in her last performance, could be devastating, quick at times, and lightning. I mean, she can finish fights that fast. That's how slick she is in her transitions and her ability to actually finish the fights on the ground. So Watterson's a very well-rounded fighter, very marketable fighter. I think that's why they stuck her in this matchup, obviously, against Namajunas. You can say a lot of the same things about her as well. I mean, very marketable. I like Namajunas because she has that edge. She's got that like tough little attitude. You know, she doesn't take any BS type of attitude or whatnot. And typically speaking, she performs and it shows in the cage as well. I mean, they both have a common opponent, as I just mentioned, with Van Zandt. Rose was able to just dominate her and end up getting the win there later in the fight. She didn't finish her quite as quickly, but it was still an impressive win for her. And then, of course, coming back and winning a fight that she lost earlier in her career against Tisha Torres, which Tisha Torres is obviously one of the best at 115 pounds. We've known that for a long time. So that was an impressive notch on her resume to get back. And it just shows a progress and a growth in Namajunas' game. I mean, she's taking it so serious right now. And I think that's what's going to come into play here. I think it's basically styles make fights and they match up well together. I just think that Namajunas might be a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger than Waterson here. So I think she's going to be able to kind of be the bully in this fight and probably outmuscle her way to a win here. Because, I mean, skill set for skill set, both of them are ultra talented. Both of them have the technical skill set to give each other problems, and both of them can honestly sub each other. I mean, if they make one mistake on the ground, the other person can definitely win this fight. So it is going to be that kind of fight where they can't afford to make many mistakes because it could be their last one in this type of fight. But I just have to favor a little bit Namajunas in this spot. I think she will probably land the harder punches on the feet, and then I think on the ground she'll probably be a little bit stronger. And with, again, them kind of neutralizing each other out a little bit on the ground, I think you have to favor Rose just a little bit. So awesome fight. I expect fireworks. I expect it to go back and forth, but I slightly lean towards Namajunas to get the W here.
And I'll admit, Rose definitely is capable of winning this fight. She's looked strong on the feet. She looked like she's starting to sit down on her strikes, pack a little bit more pop in her punches and kicks. And her ground game has always been lethal. I mean, the flying arm bars, the Kimuras, just all the attacks she's capable of throwing on the canvas definitely make her a lethal fighter pretty much anywhere. But that being said, Michelle Waterson is fighting at such a high level. Now, granted, maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, Waterson just wasn't a great fighter. She was fighting in the, you know, the atomweight division, and she was struggling, and she just started putting it all together. I think it started with her win over Jessica Penney. She gained some confidence. Her stand-up really started to improve. I know she's known as the Karate Hottie because she had the striking base, but she really wasn't a dangerous striker until her last couple fights. She's really started to put it all together. She hits hard now on the feet. And then on the ground, her ground game is just fantastic. You got to remember, she's been working with Greg Jackson at Jackson's MMA for a long time now. And man, she's really started to put it all together. Like right now, she is the best she's ever been in her entire career. Granted, so is Rose, but man, Michelle Waterson has improved so drastically. I mean, with their common opponent, Paige VanZant, Rose beat VanZant down, yes, but I mean, it took her a while to get the finish, and Michelle just blitzed her and took her out quick. Now, granted, you can't say everything about MMA math just based on performances and everything, because every fight's different, but I really do think Michelle Waterson has a really good chance here. Her wrestling might be a little bit better than Rose's, potentially. The one thing I'm a little concerned about is, Waterson could get caught with a submission. She did get caught when she lost her Invicta atomweight title, back a few years ago. But overall, man, Waterson, I think she's going to hit a little bit harder than Rose. I think that she can win the stand-up both with her, punching and kicking game. And then on the ground, I can see her getting top position. Yeah, Rose is super dangerous, but she does fade a little bit in fights, especially when she's losing, and at times she can get controlled if she's off of her back and the submissions aren't flowing. So I can see Michelle Waterson not just winning, but coming on really strong and pouring it on late in this fight. So I like Michelle Waterson. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a UFC flyweight title on the line between champion Demetrius Johnson, who is 25-2-1, and challenger Wilson Hayes, who is 22-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Johnson -1050, the comeback on Hayes at +550. And line margins basically tighten up a little bit. It's still ballpark to where it was. Right now, it's lower with Johnson as a favorite -840, but the comeback is a little bit higher with Hayes at +570. So again, margins have tightened up a little bit. And there is two action in this fight as well. Sportbooks are going to get some dog action on Hayes at +570, +500, or whatnot as well. And there's going to be a lot of crazy sickos out there that want to come in and lay Johnson because they think he's a sure thing as well. So that's just the way this fight is. I mean, people that don't hesitate to lay big juice are going to not hesitate to lay Johnson. And then there's going to be all those dog bettors out there chasing a huge dog and a quality fighter like Hayes. So the sportsbooks are going to be just fine in this fight, regardless of what happens out there. So that being said, there's not really much to say about this fight. I mean, unfortunately, even though it is a main event, and Demetrius Johnson, in my opinion, is the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, and he's been for the last couple of years. He doesn't really get the credit that he deserves despite his performances. It just seems like he should be even more marketable, or he should get more attention, and he doesn't. He kind of flies under the radar, which is a shame because he's been such a dominant champion, and again, his skill set just speaks for itself. So Mighty Mouse, Demetrius Johnson is – I mean, he's the best in the world for a reason. I mean, he really doesn't have many flaws. He got tested by Elliott in his last fight, which is a bit of a surprise to a lot of us. I mean, because he was in some heat there for a minute, but he did what he does best. He dug deep as a champion, hung in there, fought through adversity, and then obviously turned the fight around and able to win it against a very solid opponent there. So even that, I think it's good for Johnson to get tested from time to time. Now, it is interesting to see how long can Johnson keep this up. I mean, even though he's only 30 years old, I mean, he's had a lot of wars throughout his career, even though he's made them kind of one-sided. So I don't know if you'd call a lot of them wars, but he's had a lot of fights against quality competition. So I'm not sure how high he could keep his level performing even at age 30. Because he's not old, but again, in MMA years, he's getting up there. But you could say even more so to Hayes. I mean, he's 32 years old and he's been around this sport for a long, long time. He is hitting his groove here, especially in the flyweight division. I think he's looking good. He's fought obviously before at 135 pounds in a bantamweight division. He's suffered some losses to quality competition, but in most cases, Hayes comes away with a win, and it's because of his grappling. And that's the way he's going to have to win this fight. His stand up is improving. Hayes' ability to maybe land some hard punches on the feet. He's not shying away from it as much as he once was, so he could be effective a little bit on the feet. But man, he's been getting wobbled even in the fights that he's not getting finished on the feet. He's been getting rocked a little bit, so his defense needs to tighten up, and Johnson is clearly going to outstrike him on the feet. So Hayes wants to get this fight down. That's the only way he's going to really win this fight, is maybe scrambling with Demetrius Johnson, trying to end up on top, trying to hold him down, maybe taking his back, just riding out some rounds that way, just making it as ugly and as boring of a fight as possible, because I don't think he's going to be able to finish Johnson. But hey, I mean, a guy with the submission skill that Hayes has, nothing shocking when it comes to ground game of that guy, but still would be a little bit surprising. So I think that's his only way. I mean, if Johnson continues to make mistakes and lose scrambles on the ground and just get pinned on the ground in bad positions, he can lose his fight. But outside of that, he's not going to lose his fight. I mean, Johnson is the better striker. The wrestling is going to be interesting because Johnson really doesn't get out wrestled by many people. I mean, his takedown defense is pretty solid overall, and offensively he seems to be able to take down anybody he's been in the cage against. So I don't think he gets out wrestled here, and I think his ability to keep it upright and just not point Hayes on the feet will be clear enough. So interesting, though. I mean, this is definitely styles make fights, and Hayes might be a little bit of a kryptonite for Johnson. I mean, the ground, again, if you could control Johnson on the ground, you could have a little bit of success, and Hayes might be the guy to do it. We really don't know until they get in there. And again, dog action coming in, there's people that do believe that he can do so. So we'll see how it plays out. But for me, I'm not going to pick against Demetrius Johnson until I see him maybe hit that decline spot and fall off the map or whatnot. It's just hard to pick against the best fighter in the world, in my opinion. So Demetrius Johnson is probably going to get away with the win here like he always does. I mean, he's going to retain that title. And, you know, there's talks of possible super fights down the road, maybe with even Garbrandt. So we'll see how that plays out. But for right now, I do believe you'll hear and still champion Demetrius Johnson at the end of this one.
Wilson Hayes is fighting at an incredibly high level right now. Kind of like people were a bit shocked when he was announced as the number one contender. And then when the fight got kind of pulled out from under him a little bit, he almost seemed insulted, and he kind of rose to the level of a guy that is a top contender in the flyweight division. And his last couple fights, since he was originally the number one contender, he has dominated, and he's looked great. If he can get the ground game flowing against Demetrius Johnson, there's a slight chance that he could dethrone him. That being said, on the feet, Johnson is so much better than Hayes. He has a better chin. He has more power. He's more diverse with his attack. He can mix it up. In the clinch, he's super dangerous. Johnson might have one of the best clinches in all of MMA. Just brutal knees and elbows in short range. He can just mix it up and do a lot of damage to you. But on the ground, that might be where Johnson has a little bit of his kryptonite. I know that he's picked up a lot of submission victories and he's dominated fighters on the ground from top position. But when he's on bottom, when he's defending, he is a little bit vulnerable. You have to go back and see the last times that Johnson was ever in trouble in fights. It was Ian McCall when he had that draw. McCall was just crushing him from top position. Granted, again, it was a long time ago. And then when he challenged Dominic Cruz for the UFC or for the bantamweight title, he also ran into a little bit of trouble, got taken down a lot, kept on his back. And then you look at his last fight. Yeah, he won the last four rounds and kind of cruised to a decision, but Tim Elliott did have some success from top position against him. So potentially, with Wilson Hayes having such an insanely good ground game, there might be an opening here if Hayes can get the ground game flowing, can stay in top position, can threaten with submissions and ground and pound. There's a window of opportunity for him to pick up the win. But I'm more playing devil's advocate than anything here, because Demetrius Johnson is just so damn good, and he gets better every time we see him, and he's always adding more to his game. And I just, even if Wilson Hayes' ground game is going, maybe Johnson has just added so much to his game that he's able to fend it off. So overall, I just can't see Wilson Hayes getting that game plan and having success for five straight rounds without Johnson adapting and making an adjustment and winning the fight. So overall, Johnson is just too good, and that win streak keeps going. I think he gets the record for consecutive title defenses. So my pick is going to be Demetrius Johnson. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 24. Our premium bets for the event will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.